It's a very special edition of On Your Money. John Munson in for Kate Archer. Kent, Kevin is off this week. On this edition of On Your Money, we'll talk about financial literacy and how to keep our personal financial ships from capsizing during the holidays with Peggy Olive, a financial capability specialist who holds a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology's Center for Financial Security at UW-Madison and the UW Extension Cooperative Extension Family Living Program. How do you set a budget during the holiday season, and what do you do to stay on that budget? What kinds of gifts do you give in order to maintain that budget balance? And, what about creating a budget and keeping it? How good are you at that? And do you have something you'd like to share with the rest of us about what works for you? If you have questions about creating a budget or staying within one, then this is your hour. And what about those New Year's resolutions that are financial in nature? What kind should you be making? What are your biggest financial priorities in the new year? We'll also be talking about financial literacy for all ages. Adults, how do you help the young people in your life understand money and how to manage it? And listeners, what's the best financial skill you learned as a young person? What do you wish you had learned? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Peggy, welcome to On Your Money.
Great. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, it's the holiday season, in case anyone was wondering what all those lights were about. It's time for being with loved ones and for giving gifts. Perhaps you're gifting and decorating and cooking to your heart's content, but the holidays can certainly challenge a budget. Peggy, what if the holidays kind of snuck up on us and we're already feeling the strain?
Well, and I know that happens for many people. I mean, I applaud the people who are out there planning year-round and saving and have Christmas club accounts or however they set their money aside. And for many of us, the holidays do sneak up, just like winter. And it's a chance to step back and look at your monthly spending. Some of us need a little motivation to pay attention to our finances, so this could be some motivation. And have a chance to look at, you know, how much money is coming in every month, how much is going out for those regular bills, and then people really do have a pretty good idea of what that wiggle room is, you know, if any. And, you know, the less wiggle room there is, then the more creative we have to be in terms of our acknowledging how important other people are to us during the holiday season.
Well, and at the same time, you know, a lot of the places that we shop during the holidays are offering special discounts to take store credit financing. They're always offering us a new charge card. We certainly get plenty of offers in the mail and on the phone and online from credit card companies who want to say, hey, you know, you can give all those gifts and we'll make it happen for you. That's always a big temptation, isn't it?
It really is. There's so many messages we're bombarded with to consume, to make it easy to put off until after the new year to pay back some of those great deals that we find. You know, and I did a little digging in looking at some of the holiday spending. And so the average holiday spending this past year is about $1,000 per household. And I know households can reel things in when things are tighter, because I looked back in during the recession, 2008-2009, the average household spending was about $400. So we know people can, you know, pay attention to what resources and what finances they have. But once you get out there in the stores, unless you have a plan or unless you really know what your own budget is, you are bombarded with all of those great deals. And we know a lot of the spending that people do during the holiday season is on themselves. You know, when you're out and shopping more, you see more things like, oh, I could use that and I could use that. So people do a lot of picking things up for themselves, even aside from their gift list.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do. So what could we do in advance? And I realize by advance it's a little late for that now, but what can people do in advance to prepare for the cost of a holiday season? You know, one of the things that I don't see much about in advertising or hear people talk about anymore is the Christmas Club. That used to be a big promotion for banks and credit unions and savings and loans. Hey, put a little bit aside each week, and then in December, your Christmas shopping budget is already taken care of. Is there an ideal time to start saving?
There's always an ideal time to start saving, and that's right now. So I know some households, you know, do have the Christmas Club account that we mentioned. Other households, I've heard creative tips that if they get singles during the year, they set their singles aside, and then that's what they use, whatever they've collected, that's what they use for their holiday budget or the holiday spending. And so that's kind of their creative, how much are we going to have, you know, in our singles that we've saved during the year. And I think the challenge is not even so much setting up that budget ahead of time, but really knowing where your money is going month to month. I mean, I would just be thrilled if people pay attention to their spending year-round instead of just at the holidays or just in January when they're starting to maybe feel panic if they have a few extra bills coming in. So it's really paying attention to knowing what your regular monthly bills are and knowing some of those areas that you're going to need a little bit of wiggle room in and how much money you have to work with. So it's really a year-round kind of putting those pieces together.
Well, and it isn't just buying gifts either. You know, there's a lot of us have to do traveling at the holidays, which costs extra money. If you're driving, it's extra gas. It might be meals on the road. It might be an overnight hotel stay, things that aren't necessarily part of your regular monthly budget but need to be prepared for, and we know they're coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Traveling, we've mentioned gifts. Maybe you have a few more mouths to feed, maybe making some special traditional meals. And all those can add up. So even if you have a handle on what your monthly gas bill might be, what you're spending for transportation or what you're spending on food, we're pretty sure that most households are going to be spending a little bit more. So how do you start planning for some of that wiggle room? You know, and as we mentioned, if you've saved up ahead of time, great. If you also look at your current budget and you know if there's a few other places you can cut back, you know, maybe spending less on some other types of entertainment or personal items or putting off maybe that household purchase, you can make that extra amount, find that little extra bit of money for December. Or after January rolls around, when you do have those bills coming in, that's another opportunity to pay attention to your spending, track where your money is going, and then figure out, okay, maybe there are a few other payments or personal purchases I can defer in order to make those payments. So it's not a one and done. You can just keep paying attention and looking for that little bit of wiggle room, either to pay back bills or to start saving up for next year.
Should we just absolutely never take on debt during the holiday season, or are there cases where it might be justified?
That is such a personal decision. Some people are not okay with debt, not okay with owing. Other people are okay with having some debt, and they also, I would say people who are the most okay with planning to take on debt are those who also have a plan to pay off that debt. So maybe a family has planned a large purchase. Maybe they're going to get a new TV or a new laptop for Christmas. Hopefully they're not listening to this show so they don't know what's under the tree. But maybe they have planned that large purchase, and so maybe they have plans. So, okay, and then we can afford to pay, you know, that $200 a month for 3 or 4 months or whatever that might be.
That would be a pretty big tree to hide a TV under it.
Yes, yeah. Okay, maybe the laptop. That's a bad example there.
Okay, let's take some phone calls here. We have Lisa with us from Eau Claire. Lisa, hello. Thanks for joining us on Your Money.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So basically, I'm still working on this. I'm only 24 and trying to build up good credit, but the one thing that I try to challenge myself with when making big purchases is to think, okay, can I buy this twice? And if I can buy it twice, I know that I have enough money to be able to afford it and to be able to afford my other expenses as well.
Lisa, thanks for that advice. Wait on it until you can buy it twice. Peggy Olive?
Yeah, that's a really creative strategy. I like how Lisa has done that. You know, and when people are purchasing some things on credit without a plan to pay back, sometimes they are almost buying that item twice in terms of the money they're going to put towards those interest payments. So, as I mentioned, if you pay it on credit and you don't have a plan like Lisa, having that extra money or that extra cushion, you could end up spending that much in reality.
And, you know, my mother's advice to me, and I have to say I haven't always followed it, but she always said, and this is something she followed, she said, only buy on credit what you can pay cash for. But then I don't think my mom ever bought a car, and I know she never had a driver's license. She would use credit when she already had the money, and she would just use it. And, of course, she had a credit score that would have made a really good SAT score. So it worked out pretty well for her. Lisa, thanks so much for that call. 800-642-1234. Your chance to call On Your Money and talk with Peggy Olive, Financial Capability Specialist, holding a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology's Center for Financial Security at UW-Madison and UW Extension's Cooperative Extension Family Living Program. 800-642-1234. So as we're preparing a holiday budget, Peggy, or maybe we're reining in something if we've already gone over budget during the holiday season, what are your suggestions?
For some people, having a budget, which means like sitting down and figuring out where their money goes, you know, day to day, month to month, for some people that works, and that helps them keep aware of how much their total spending can be in their household. I would also say that the person who can just make a budget and say, yeah, that's what I'm going to spend, is a rare person. For most of us, just having a static budget written down on a piece of paper is not that helpful. So I would say the number one thing people can start doing, you can start doing today, or you could pick, you know, January 1st, it's a great New Year's resolution, is to track your spending. Have some way to just keep track of that day-to-day, how much money is going out of your pocket, how much some of those monthly bills are, what you might be spending at the grocery store once or twice a week, and just keeping track of that. And the reason that keeping track just that day-to-day is so important is because it really helps raise awareness. So you write down your spending, and as you're writing it down, that's pulling your awareness onto, okay, what did I just purchase? How does that fit into my monthly spending? Am I spending a little bit more? Did I have to do an extra trip to the grocery store? Or did gas prices go up at the pump this week or this month? And so it's raising your awareness. And then at the end of the month, you can sit down and add up those numbers and balance it against what your income is for the month. And we know there's been research studies out there, the U.S. Financial Diaries, and they tracked over 200 households for a year in four different cities all across the U.S., and we know that there is no such thing as a typical month. So an average household has at least 2 months where they'll have just some increased expenses, you know, something's going to happen, and then they also have a couple months where maybe they have a little bit more money. Maybe there's a tax refund or birthday gifts or they've sold something. So we know that, you know, being aware of your spending and your income is going to keep changing every month. So just having some steps in place to be able to keep track of that and then adjust the next month. I mean, after you've tracked for the month, that month is done. So what do you want to do differently the next month?
Mm-hmm. You have some advice for people if cash is tight. What sort of gift ideas do you think might work?
There's so many ideas out there on the Internet. There's ideas that people just have with their own creativity. You know, I think one of the hardest challenges is being okay with not giving a gift. I mean, being okay with making a card, maybe baking something, having a family service. Maybe the family gets together to shovel, which might be coming up later this week, or getting together and doing some dog walking service. So using what resources that you do have, maybe it's a little time, maybe it's some talent, and then being okay with that. I mean, realizing what that gift means to you, means to the person you're giving with. And sure, if money was unlimited, you know, we could all give, you know, wonderful, extravagant gifts year-round. Why limit it to the holidays?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's just being okay with where you're at, what resources you have, and, you know, just feeling like you can express yourself to the people that you care about. And then if they give you a gift back and you know they've spent a little bit more than you have, that's okay too. Everyone needs to follow their own guidelines, their own budget, and you know, speak just for themselves with their own budget.
Well, we had an email from Paul in Eau Claire that, Peggy, I'm sure you'll agree with, and then we're going to discuss this, and then we'll go to a break. Paul writes, this is my first Christmas season without using a credit card. Using cash forces me to budget, and I've noticed it changes my spending habits. It's a definite improvement. Well, that's exactly what you've been telling us, Peggy.
Yeah, great for Paul. Just setting that aside, using what cash he has in hand. You know, maybe he saved it up year-round. Maybe he's just using what he can stretch out of his current monthly budget. And it really does limit you from, you mentioned all of those offers you're bombarded with.
Mm-hmm.
It really does help you to stick with what your resources are, not just at the holiday season, but year-round. So you're living really within your means.
All right, Paul, thanks for that email. It's On Your Money, a very special edition of On Your Money. Peggy Olive is with us. She's an expert on fiscal education. And we're going to be talking about fiscal literacy, financial literacy later in the program. There's the state of Wisconsin has passed a law mandating that our schools, K-12, teach financial literacy. And Peggy will have some thoughts on that. As we go forward with this week's edition of On Your Money. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a very special edition of On Your Money. I'm John Munson. Kevin McKinley is off this week. We'll hear him again next week. Peggy Olive is with us this week. And Peggy is a financial capability specialist who holds a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology's Center for Financial Security and the UW Extension Cooperative Extension Family Living Program. We're taking your questions and calls about a lot of things today, but we've been focused on how we maintain our financial sanity during the holiday season. And it isn't just gift giving. There are a lot of expenses associated with this time of the year. And we're talking about how best to manage our finances during this time. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. It's On Your Money, and you have a chance to call in and talk to us about these important issues. So 2018 is right around the corner, Peggy. Spending less and saving more, fairly common New Year's resolutions. That's certainly the mantra at On Your Money. What do you suggest for someone who wants to achieve one or both of those goals?
Well, I like to look at our finances in terms of a financial well-being lens. And some of my colleagues at the UW have worked with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and they've done focus groups and looked at different research and talked to financial counselors. And we know the kind of things that stress people out with their money, but what I liked about the whole financial well-being approach is they asked people who felt like they had a good handle on their money what was going well for them. And so I like to look at getting a handle on spending in terms of increasing all of our financial well-being. And generally, how we consider that is to have good financial well-being, it means that we have a handle on our daily or monthly spending. You know, maybe it's that tracking that I've mentioned or knowing where your money's going. It means having a plan for emergencies because life will happen and things do happen. It means making progress towards financial goals. Maybe it's saving money for the holidays for next year or saving money for summer vacation or whatever that might be, or a longer term like retirement. And then also in that day-to-day, it means having a little bit of wiggle room in your budget just to spend on those things that are personally important to you. So we all, you know, we're working hard for our money, and we all need to have a little bit of wiggle room so that if we want to buy gifts at the holidays or make some special foods or travel to see family, you have that wiggle room. Or maybe it's for birthdays year-round, or maybe it's for back-to-school time, or maybe it's for making those donations to causes that are important to you. So it's finding that wiggle room in our day-to-day spending, too. So I look at having a good handle on finances is paying attention to that well-rounded big picture.
One of the things that happens is, we're trying to find out what we really need to include in our budget is it these days. It's really easy to get nickel and dimed to death, particularly, for example, I was just thinking about this the other day about entertainment. So maybe you've got cable. Well, maybe you also bought Netflix and maybe you wanted to get, BritBox or Acorn or Hulu or any one of a half a dozen others. Streaming services for entertainment, and yeah, it only looks like it costs $6.99 or $7.99 or $10.99, but that's every month, and pretty soon you can have $30-$40 a month tied up in something that you don't even really think about. How do we determine what we really need to include in our budget?
Again, that's one of those personal decisions. If somebody values entertainment, maybe they're a budding film producer or future actor, I'm not going to begrudge them. That's what's important to them. That's part of that finding room in your budget for those priorities. And also, along with that, if you're going to be spending that much on just the monthly entertainment fees, what are you going to cut out of your budget? Because everything you add in, you have to take something out to stay within that amount of money that you have to work with month to month. So, maybe you like the entertainment, but maybe you don't go out to eat as much, or maybe you spend less on clothing, or maybe you don't have a pet because those can be expensive. So that's fine. It's, follow your passion and find out what's important to you. And then if I was looking at somebody's spending, ideally I would say, I can see this is important to you because that's where you're putting more of your money. So my goal for everyone is that if they're sitting back at the end of the month and looking at where their money went, they would be happy with where their money is going, aside from any, bills or illness. But they would be happy where they're spent choosing to spend their money. And if they're not happy, then next month they can make some changes. Maybe they can cut back on the entertainment to free up some more money for other things they enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another phone call. This time we'll go to Mitchell in Oshkosh. Mitchell, welcome to On Your Money. What's your question for Peggy Olive?
Hey, Peggy. How you doing today? Long-time listener, first-time caller here. One thing that my parents actually taught me when I was younger to save money, it was just putting it away early and not really looking at it before you even got it into your bank account. And what they did was they took money away monthly that was technically my rent to live with them once I was starting working when I was 16. And then when I moved out, when I was 18, I actually got all of that money back to me that I paid them for rent. It was kind of just a way for them to teach me how to budget in the long run. And then I actually take that and apply it to Christmas. So I start budgeting early and just put the money away before it even hits my bank account. And then once Christmas comes around, I then take all that money out, and that's going to be my Christmas fund for the year.
Well, Peggy, that sounds like great advice.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I love the out of sight, out of mind. And that's terrific that your parents were able to do that for you. And that, furthermore, you are able to pick that up as your own habit, too. So if you don't have that money in your checking account or it's not on your debit card, then that's great. I mean, you're not spending that. You don't. Usually people, when they set that money aside in a separate account, it's off the radar screen, and so they're not looking at it as part of their monthly spending. So that's wonderful, and I'm not sure if Mitch is still on, but if he sets that money in a separate savings account or something that he just makes it a little bit harder to get to, that's even better.
Mitchell, thanks so much for your phone call and for sharing your advice with us. If you've got an idea, if you've got something that's worked for you, how about sharing it with the rest of us? Maybe it would work for us, too. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Peggy, one of your purposes is to help people align their money with their values. How do you help them do that?
As I mentioned earlier, tracking the spending is a great place to start because it just raises your awareness. Lots of times I've worked with you know, 1,000 people over the past few decades, and they say, yeah, I know where my money's going. And once you start tracking it and sit back and look where your money is spent, maybe there's a few things that come up where you weren't quite aware, or now that you know, you can make a few different decisions. So it's not just about the actual spending and the amount of money you're spending, it's looking back and making those decisions. So, for example, you mentioned the entertainment spending. Then does that fit your values? Does that fit something that you hold dear in terms of that creativity or that entertainment? And if that's a great fit, wonderful. And if it doesn't fit your values, if you want to put that money towards something else, then you can make that conscious decision in your spending for the next month. So I figure, you know, that last month is done. What do we want to do differently for next month?
And, well, you know, go ahead.
It really is being aware of your values and what's important to you. Even if you don't sit down and list your values, it's the where is your money going and how do you like that?
Well, it sounds an awful lot like the advice that I get about dieting. I mean, if you actually write down everything you eat during the day, you discover that there's a real discrepancy between what you actually ate and what you think you ate. They don't ever really match unless you're really paying attention. And so money's the same way. We really need to pay attention to where all of it goes, not just the big things. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I know that's not easy to do, especially in the hustle and bustle of the holidays. I mean, it's a banner month at my house if I floss. So just trying to track your spending and pay attention to it, it can feel like a burden and another thing to do. So even doing it for a week or a few weeks, just to start getting that snapshot, it does take, once you start to do it, you know, it can take a few months to get into the habit. Maybe you use an app. Maybe you just write it down on a piece of paper. But once you start to do that, it really can be eye-opening, just like you mentioned, you know, whether it's money or with food.
How can you determine what your financial well-being is?
Well, as I mentioned, those factors with financial well-being, you know, knowing where your money's going, having a little bit of wiggle room, having some plan for emergencies, and making progress towards financial goals. I did share a link that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually has a financial well-being self-assessment. And so it's very short. I believe it's maybe 10, 12 questions where anyone can get online and take this financial well-being self-assessment. And it asks questions about, you know, if an unexpected expense came up, you know, how much stress would that create? Or would you be able to cover that? Or if, you know, whether it's an illness or maybe it's a wedding invitation and you'd want to be able to get something to go to that wedding or to travel to the wedding. So it just helps you get a handle on, do you have that plan for emergencies, or do you have that little bit of money set aside for something that's important to you for a future goal or future spending? So I think something like that self-assessment is a fun place to start. And then just those four factors I've mentioned, just taking a look at your own spending and thinking about, okay, if you did have unexpected expense, you know, whether it would be an illness or the car breaks down or a fun event or a family wedding, or are you making progress towards financial goals? Are you setting aside that little bit of money? Are you like Mitchell that we heard too from, do you have that little bit of money set aside out of sight, out of mind, so that you know it's there? You got that little bit of nest egg? So even it gives a chance to start in the new year with how well-rounded are your finances.
And we do have a link to that financial well-being questionnaire. You can find it at WPR.org. So take a look for that and fill it out, and hopefully that will help you. So we're trying to improve our finances. You work for UW Extension. I'm guessing that there are a lot of useful facts on the Extension website as well, which we have linked to the morning show website, that would help us improve our finances. Can you highlight a few of those?
Oh, absolutely. It has just some basic budgeting tools that we've talked about here today. Some of the information on there is designed for if people are having a rougher time of it. You know, maybe there has been a big increase in expenses or a big decrease in spending. So we have some materials on our website about, you know, managing finances in tough times. And we also have information about reaching those goals that I mentioned. We have a small savings build big dreams to help parents with young children think about setting aside a little bit of money for that education or career development after high school, you know, helping support their child to get set up in the profession that they would like after high school. And then we have a lot of tools for day-to-day. We have a Rent Smart program and curriculum that helps people who are maybe new to renting and knowing how to budget their money for renting and keeping up that good credit history. We have a Check Your Free Credit Report campaign that anyone can sign up for, and it gives you a chance to sign up to get 3 emails a year on February 2nd, June 6th, and October 10th as a reminder that you can get one free credit report from each of the 3 major credit reporting bureaus every single year. So we're trying to make it easy. You know, as I mentioned, you get busy in the hustle and bustle of the day-to-day. So here's a chance to get a reminder, hey, have you checked one of your free credit reports lately? So a bunch of tools like that, some tax credit information for year-end, and then a few other targeted programs for other individuals we work with. So lots of great materials out there.
You mentioned financial assistance or financial advice for people who are going through tough times. And, of course, we know that a lot of people are having tough times this year in general. Is there a hierarchy of which bills to pay first if you have to prioritize?
Absolutely. And we have some information about that on our Tough Times website. Because, again, it's going to be a little unique to your situation. Typically, as a filter, when you think about you only have so much money and you have many bills, thinking about those priorities in terms of your home. Maybe it's your mortgage or your rent payment. Maybe it's keeping up with transportation to get to your job. And then there's other utilities and food. And then going down from there. We know not all debt is created equal. Sometimes, you know, you don't want to get your car repossessed versus if you skip a credit card payment, yeah, it's really going to hurt your credit report. But, you know, it will give you that little bit of wiggle room to try to catch up. And you might have some late fees and pay more interest, but they're not going to come and take back things that you purchased on your credit card. So we do provide some information for people to help put that through a filter for their own personal situation. And then we provide some links. If somebody really is in a tough spot, there's debtadvice.org where people can find a nonprofit certified credit counselor in their area that can help them make some of these decisions or even perhaps work with their creditors with them.
All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll have more of our very special edition of On Your Money with Peggy Olive. Peggy, when we come back, I want to have us kind of shift gears just a little bit here and talk about financial literacy for kids. And we have some calls and some emails to get to yet as we continue with On Your Money. Peggy Olive is my guest today. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On Your Money, I'm John Munson. Kevin is off this week. Peggy Olive is on, and Peggy is a financial capability specialist. We're talking in this segment of On Your Money about financial literacy for kids. Peggy, I know this is a real interest of yours. What's the value of making sure children and other young people understand money management?
Well, I think we've already heard a little bit of the value on the show today in terms of the messages you get from your parents. Maybe it's role modeling some of those techniques or some of those skills, or even in addition to modeling, even helping kids make those spending decisions and having a chance to practice making decisions as they get a little bit older, you know, and before those decisions get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it can be tough if your kids pick up your bad habits instead, and I have personal experience with this. I think our children grew up thinking that as long as you had checks, you still had money. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Governor Scott Walker recently signed into law legislation that requires public school boards in the state to adopt academic standards for financial literacy and incorporate instruction in personal finance into the curriculum from kindergarten through high school. First, what have Wisconsin standards been in the past, Peggy?
Well, we have had a model of academic standards for personal financial literacy for a good decade or so. I think the challenge is that school districts have been kind of on their own in terms of following those standards or having some of those benchmarks and creating some different programs using existing resources. I think what has changed now is that all schools will be required to meet some of these performance standards for grades 4, 8, and 12, and however they want to meet those standards. So there's still a lot of wiggle room in terms of how schools want to incorporate those standards, you know, whether it's in a English class or a math class or perhaps in high school a personal business class. So there are some schools across Wisconsin who have been doing a great job and doing a lot of different programs in the classroom and with community events, and then other schools where it's been a little bit piecemeal. So now it's just an opportunity for all schools to focus on, okay, what are these benchmarks and where can we add more in?
And so the law basically is turning this into a mandate, saying, okay, now it's not just voluntary anymore. Everybody's got to get involved in this. Is the state, do you know, putting any resources into the school districts to help them put these plans in place, or are they on their own?
Well, this mandate did not come with any new resources. We do have some existing resources that some school districts are already tapping into. And, you know, if there's any school districts listening, they could certainly contact me and the UW, and we can certainly share more ideas and other ideas for resources. But that definitely is a challenge. So it's still up to schools to figure out what's going to be the best fit for their program and their students locally based on their resources and their maybe it's community speakers or their expertise that they have within their school system. So, yeah, that is still a challenge for schools to be able to put something together pretty much on their own.
And people are still calling in and submitting their ideas to help us budget for things during the year. Here's an email from Joe in De Pere who says, one thing we do every year is tally up all the birthday and Christmas gifts we'll need to buy for the year. When we get our tax refund, we put the money in a special savings account just for gifts that we can draw from as needed. This means we don't need to stress out about where the money for this gift or that gift is coming from. And that sounds like a great idea, Joe. Paul is with us on the phone in Montreal. Paul, and I don't mean Montreal, Canada. I mean Montreal, Wisconsin. Paul, thanks for joining us on Your Money.
Yeah, it's a common misconception. There have been a number of people that thought I'd be calling in from Canada.
And you'd be speaking French.
Oui. Anyway, a couple of things really quickly. First of all, my wife and I, when we got married, neither of us were in debt. And shortly after we got married, I had come out of the service. So I was using the GI Bill, but we had checked in on a student loan, and in the process of doing so, went to a bank, and they gave us one of these forms, basically, that stated all to, you know, it was a sheet that you could put all of your information down on a monthly basis as to what you're spending. And we started that and did it for 11 years. And one of the things we noticed was every year we knew what we were spending more on, what we were spending less on. So it made it very easy for us to budget. We really understood what we were doing. And because of that, we also did our own taxes. When you do your own taxes, you're always aware of what you're spending your money on, and you're capable of understanding that. Okay, another thing that we did is we realized that the worst thing you can possibly do is burn your money up. So my wife and I, neither of us decided we were going to smoke. But instead, we put that money aside and used that money for major purchases. The major purchase we'd had was a car. So we'd buy a car, even though both of us worked. We'd always find a place where we would have an apartment or whatever close to one business so that we could walk. One person would walk and the other person would use the vehicle. And that, in saving in transportation, and the idea that we always had enough money to actually pay for a vehicle, with the exception of one time when we had, for 3 years, a 1.99 rate, when I knew that even a money market at that time was paying 2 to 3 times that. So just using money in the money market, we were able to easily make monthly payments on a vehicle. But all of the times, because we didn't smoke, what you would figure for a pack of cigarettes, initially I think we had it, maybe we'd go through 3 packs in a week, and then did that accordingly. And by the time we got a chance to save up, we were able to buy a vehicle. We knew what our taxes were. We knew what our spending was. And consequently, retired early with no pension, just on savings, just on investing. We also learned you can't make it just investing in CDs. There I am.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much. Paul from Montreal, he and his wife would be the poster couple for financial planning, wouldn't they, Peggy?
Yeah, absolutely. And that really speaks to everything in terms of just being aware of where your money is going. And how wonderful that Paul and his wife could sit down and look at that together. And to be able to work that through and come up with a plan together. We don't expect couples to always be on the same page in terms of those values or the priorities for spending. And yet it's so important to have an opportunity or a way or a plan to sit down and talk about that so that everybody gets to have their own little bit of wiggle room in terms of what's important to them. And all the better that, Paul and his wife are on the same page, makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. Paul, thank you so much for joining us on Your Money. Let's go to Williams Bay next and hear what Nancy has to say. Nancy, welcome to On Your Money. What's your question for Peggy Olive?
Good morning. Thank you. So this is a family and money dynamics question. My husband and I are starting to see a bit of a pattern with our, we have two children in their mid and late 30s, and when it gets to close to Christmas, our daughter is starting to ask to borrow money for one time it was to remodel their basement, and this year it's to buy a luxury car. And they're in good financial shape primarily because my husband and I have helped. They don't have a mortgage because over a number of years we've given them enough money to purchase their house, but they're in a situation that if they lost their jobs and they don't have that much for retirement, now they're asking to borrow money, and they're very conscientious. They've done it before. They always make payments, but this is to buy something my husband and I consider extremely extravagant and wouldn't buy for ourselves. And so our dilemma is, we say no and make them feel childish. We just are not sure what to do. We absolutely can afford it. That isn't an issue.
Okay. Nancy, thanks for joining us. What do you say to Nancy, Peggy?
Well, I can hear Nancy does have concerns about just some of the spending decisions, and that she also acknowledges all of the great things that her kids are doing with their budgets. They're responsible and they pay back. They're just maybe making those decisions in a different order from how Nancy would like to see it done, in terms of first you save up and then you buy instead of borrowing and buying and paying back. So I applaud Nancy for, kind of doing what she feels is best for her in her household and responding to her kids. That is a challenge, though. We are all wired differently, and we could certainly hope people handle their money in a different way, and we can send them that message. But then you have to, it's Nancy's money. She's going to have to respond how she feels most comfortable.
Nancy, thanks so much for sharing that with us today on Your Money. 800-642-1234. Might have time to sneak you in if you call right now. Let's quickly take a call from Zach in Madison. Zach, you're on Your Money. What's your question for Peggy Olive?
Hi, good morning, Peggy. Thank you for being on today. So there was a conversation earlier about entertainment companies nickeling and diming your budget. And my wife and I, we just recently identified that our entertainment budget was pretty sizable. And we decided to start making cuts. And one cut was we eliminated satellite radio or Sirius radio. But we had no idea the mental capacity, mental stamina it was going to take to actually call this company and cancel our subscription. We went into it just saying, hey, we'd like to cancel. And they're firing back questions like, oh, let's see about your plan. What do you like? You don't want to cancel. Let's look at this. What about that? And after 15, 20 minutes of battling, you know, the person on the other end who's trained to keep you in their company, they finally gave in and they said, fine, we'll cancel it. But lo and behold, 2 weeks later, we get the billing statement. They're still billing us for satellite radio. And we had to call them back again, go through the whole ordeal, you know, and it's just, it was absolutely amazing. We had no idea how much mental stamina you were going to need to battle some of these predatory entertainment companies like SiriusXM. And kids nowadays, I mean, they're not going to know. If it was like an 18-year-old kid or 20-year-old kid, they probably just roll over and say, fine, you're right, I believe you. I'll just pick a different plan because I believe you. You're the grown up.
Okay. Zach, we're almost out of time, and I want to give Peggy a chance to respond to this. These companies that we buy from can really make it tough to get away from them.
It is. They make it so easy to sign up, and it's almost instantaneous. And then when it's time to drop a service or cancel or switch that service, it is a lot of hoops to go through. And I hate to break it to Zach, too, in terms of the a company. He'll probably be getting letters in the mail for the next year with some great deals to come back and re-sign up and rejoin, just kind of keeping at them. So that is a challenge. And, you know, I was thinking about our conversation a little earlier in terms of skills that children need as they're growing up. And one of the things we are doing with our Money As You Grow program is looking at that really early childhood, like ages 3 to 8, and it's helping kids to develop executive functioning skills. And those are those skills to exert self-control, decision-making, problem-solving, because those are those skills when we start focusing on those early on, you can see how they can last a whole lifetime, and you can start applying those towards financial decisions, you know, and all those other decisions in life. So that financial capability and those financial skills really start early on, and then building up that that sense of self, you know, not keeping up with the Joneses, being okay with your own values and your own habits. That's sure. Something that kids can take on for the rest of their lives.
Or as Kevin would say, spend less, save more. Peggy Olive, thank you so much for joining me today on Your Money. Peggy Olive is Financial Capability Specialist who holds a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology's Center for Financial Security and the UW Extension Cooperative Extension Family Living Program. The morning show is produced by Brianne Chassau and Bill Martins. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer and provided technical direction. I'm John Munson. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.